The beloved TV quiz. The weakest link.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
Who wants to be a millionaire? Family Fortunes, or if you're in the US, Family Feud. They've all delighted audiences and contestants for generations and made their hosts into megastars. But more recently, there's been a different kind of quiz show that's made a different kind of star. On this show, the contestant isn't the only one with success at stake. On this show, the quiz itself has a horse in the race. There's a very human aspect to the challenge this particular quiz puts up, and it's in the form of a chaser. And it's the most recent addition to the team of chasers that we're most interested in here, due to their very obvious mirror moment. It's time to talk to Dara Ennis, the Menace, on ITV's quiz show The Chase, and say to him, let's take a look in your mirror.
In Your Mirror with Neil Velio.
The idea of this show is that you'll hear how successful people of today and the future have been overcoming their demons to win big in life. We'll learn all about how they've looked in their mirror and then looked back at their past life through it. My hope is that you listen to these stories and then you feel inspired to find a way to also look back at your past life in your mirror. Dara Ennis is the latest chaser to join the ITV quiz show, The Chase. And the way he got the gig was very interesting. For now, let's revisit that first moment we saw him on The Chase.
Welcome to the show, Dara.
Thanks, Brad.
Where are you from?
I'm originally from Dublin, but I live in Oxford.
Okay, and what do you do in Oxford?
I'm a scientist at the university.
All right, what do you do in your spare time?
I'm on the committee of the local Gaelic football team.
And if you were to win some money today, what would you do with it?
Well, I recently bought my first house and there's no back door, so we'd probably get a back door fitted.
That would be handy.
Yeah.
How much is a back door?
£1,000.
Crikey.
If you've seen the episode, then you'll know how things develop, and we will get to that. But for now, let's learn a little bit more about who Dara was before his appearance.
Dara.
Well, Dara was a pretty obnoxious child, to be honest. I was always pretty clever, but my worst problem was I was always really aware of how clever I was. So I don't think I really would have liked myself if I met myself back then. I've sort of grown out of that, luckily. But I grew up in Ireland in a really nice home with, you know, we were moderately well off and we never wanted anything. And both of my parents were really, really into education and especially books. I had an inexhaustible supply of books. And I mean that literally inexhaustible. If I wanted books, my dad would immediately buy me them because he was such a fan of us reading. He loved it. And I used to drive everyone crazy. I grew up in a 3-bedroom house with, like, there was 5 children in my family. And I would sit, and I mean this, at the bottom of the stairs with my back to the window and a book for like hours. And people would have to step over me to go up and downstairs to go to the bathroom and stuff. So I grew up in an extremely sort of well-balanced, happy household with two really, really sort of supportive parents who have done nothing but support me all my life. When I went to university, which I did for 10 years, which is pretty phenomenal, they backed me up, but sort of financially and in every other way, you know. So I was very, very privileged in an educational and family sense.
Right, Dara, I wish you all cash build around each correct answer worth £1,000. We only need to get one. We've got a door. You ready?
Yeah.
Your time starts now. Airline life jackets are usually stored whereabouts on the plane?
Under the seats.
Correct. What exercise has the body rising from a prone position by straightening the arms?
Press-ups.
Correct. Just in time, Dara. Brilliant. How many do you reckon you got?
8.
9. £9,000. Very good player. Now, time to face a chaser, but who are we playing today?
I don't mean to sound unkind with this, and I think actually in the new 20s, this is actually a term of endearment rather than an offensive thing to say, but you basically sound like you were a classic nerd, a bit of a geek growing up.
Absolutely, and always have been a nerd. I tried to rail against it and tried to pretend to be cool, but I've never been cool. I was classically bad at sports, and I mean really bad at sports, almost comically bad. If 12 people turned up for a football match and we needed to, you know, fit people in the cars and only one couldn't make it, I was always the one who was left behind, always. At one point, my brother had a fight with my football manager because we were losing the game like 5 or 6 nil and it was 10 minutes to go and he still wouldn't put me on as a sub.
And how did that impact on your sort of social relationships growing up?
I didn't too much because I grew up in a really nice town called Rathcoole, and my parents moved in the very late 60s, so about 11 years before I was born, which when all, when this small village became a town. So lots of development happened, loads of houses were built. And sort of like the street and the estate I grew up on had a couple of hundred houses in it with a school and all of that. So there were vast numbers of people who were my age, lots of young families. The school was just up the road. And I am still friends with about 30 people that I went to primary school with. We had a big social grouping. So being a bit of a nerd and things wasn't too much of an issue because it kind of got diluted down because you were in big groups. So it didn't hit me socially too much. I was regularly the butt of jokes. Like I said, I was no good at sports or games or anything like that. So I always got a butt of joke, but I don't mind that. So we got along really well.
Give us a bit of a brief overview of what it is that your job entails. It's something to do with insects and studying their brains, I believe.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. So I work in the biochemistry department, which is where I am right now, actually, in Oxford University. So I work in the Davis lab, and that's the name of the boss, Ilan Davis. And so he's gone mad if he hears this. He doesn't like being called the boss. It's a very collegiate atmosphere. So the group leader is Ilan, and we study fly brains. So fruit fly brains, that's really hard to say. You'd think I'd get practice by now. So these are the same fruit flies that are in your house, the little red-eyed guys that hang around your bananas during the summer. And they're a really common model that are used in science because they're really easy to manipulate genetically and lots of other reasons. But we study how their brains work, how their synapses, so how their neural connections grow and shrink, but we're doing it at like a molecular level. So it mostly involves some biochemistry, but it's really, really advanced microscopy and imaging techniques that we do to really understand the chemical and microbiological basis of how memories are made and lost and how brains develop.
And what drew you into doing that as a job?
I'm an insect scientist. That's what I did my PhD in. So it was a very different world. So this is very high tech, high budget, leading cutting edge stuff. My PhD I did in Maynooth in Ireland in an ecology lab. So I spent my time out in forests, digging up tree stumps, collecting insects and using biological control agents. So trying to figure out non-chemical ways of controlling insect pests in forestry. So it's a very different world. And when I first arrived in Oxford, I only came here. We lived in Canada before that. I only came here because my wife got a job here. So she got a job actually just across the street from here in the chemistry department. And I was just hanging around, but I applied for, I think, 120 jobs before I got an interview. And that includes like part-time jobs, paid by the hour jobs. I applied for everything because I was here on my own. My wife was working all day. We were living in one room. I was going absolutely mad. And I tried applying for science jobs, didn't even get a look in. Christmas time, I applied for temporary jobs working in shops, anything. I just wanted a job. We needed the money. I spoke to like a manager in one of the major supermarkets who were trying to hire people, and they turned me down because I was overqualified. So I spent maybe 2 months sitting in a single room and gradually losing my sanity. But I applied for this job here. It was a technician's position. So I would have been very overqualified for it, but it was mostly to manage the insect stock. So looking after the flies, which I could do in my sleep. I'm an insect biologist. And luckily I got the job and I just kept taking on more responsibility and I just kept getting promoted basically. And now I'm the lab manager. So I had to keep going and work my way into a position just mostly by hard work and sort of doing being innovative and really pushing. And if there was ever any extra, because I was bored doing the easy stuff, if there was any extra things to do, and I ended up getting my own project, published a paper. And yeah, I'm basically myself and one other guy are the two senior people in the lab, and I run the lab for a lab.
I mean, it sounds intense. I mean, it's hard enough for me being a podcast producer as my sort of full-time job and then doing podcasts like this as kind of like the hobby side of things. But to think that you're actually doing all that, quite important work, and then you're going off to do a TV show as well. When do you sleep, Dara?
Very rarely, actually, because I've got small children as well. So I used to sleep a lot less than I do now. I'm actually kind of very tired at the moment. But when I first sort of started the chase, I was only sleeping about 5 hours a night or maybe 6 hours a night, sometimes less. So I would stay up and read and study after my wife had gone to bed. But now I'm too tired. So I just have to try and fit it in whenever I can. So I do work this job full time. And then, when a lot of other people would do their kind of hobbies or just chill out, my hobby now is doing quizzes. So I'm on four quiz teams. I study quiz books, I read up facts. I no longer read fantasy books and all the other things that I want to read. I read, you know, classic novels and history books and geography books and quiz books all the time. So, you know, I'm not the only one though. You know, Sean does work full time as a barrister, and that's a seriously difficult job. You know, his main job definitely has more hours than mine does. And, you know, Paul, when he's allowed to tour, is a full time touring comedian. The three of us do have actual proper jobs, but to be honest, the job isn't the problem. It's the kids. The kids kill my time.
Look, that is refreshingly honest.
Fair time and children. Like, if I have a choice between playing with my kids and, you know, trying to learn a list of Olympic gold medalists, I'm going to pick the kids every time. You know, I want to spend time with them. I don't want to be sort of, you know, working hard and studying. If they go, oh, do you want to play with Lego or something? Of course I'm going to play with Lego.
Skywalker, the Jedi wouldn't have bothered returning. Who do you want to play?
I'd like to play Paul.
Why is that?
Apparently he used to play in the quiz league I play in Oxford before I was there.
You play in a quiz league?
Yes, in a pub quiz league.
Time to bring on the chaser. Well, here he comes. A surprise to me, as it is to you. That's who we're playing today. It is the Cinnaman. It's Paul Cinnaman.
Hello, Dara. As you know, that was outstanding. Not only do you have very good general knowledge, but you appear to be the only man in Britain who actually listens to the airline safety announcement. Very, very good.
Thanks very much.
Dara.
The way that Dara became the menace is what's really interesting here. It's not just that his appearance was successful.
Nine grand, then. Correct answer is... it is Kate. Well played.
It's the way in which he beat the chaser. And the chaser's comments that clearly got the attention of the show's producers. But Dara is typically quite humble about that.
I do want to point out that like a lot of people who get this kind of thing, a lot of it is down to just a bit of luck with timing. So, you know, they were kind of thinking about hiring a new person when I popped onto the screen. But it kind of starts when I moved to Oxford first. I joined the local Gaelic Association, so the Gaelic Sports Association. There's a club in Oxford called Éire Óg, and I was on their committee, and I made a lot of friends, and they had a pub quiz team. And they were short someone because someone left, and they asked, look, do you do quizzes? And I didn't really do quizzes. This is another thing that people don't get, is that I'm not at this for years and years and years. This isn't something I've been doing forever. I would do a quiz if there was one in a pub I happened to be in. I always loved them, but I wasn't a regular quizzer, so I joined that quiz team. And I loved it. I still do. It's really good fun. I get along with all the guys. We have a great time. And despite what people might think, we definitely don't win. We're a mid-table team at best. So this is a long-established league in Oxford with really good teams in it. But because I was in that team, they regularly use quiz leagues like that to recruit people for quiz shows. So I applied for a load of them. We applied for Eggheads. I applied for Pointless. I got onto one show called Rebound. It was a daytime quiz show that I think it only ran for one series. Maybe it wasn't very successful. I don't think it was taken up.
Dara, you're going to have to be quick and correct. Next question. Which of these is the correct answer? Ian Poulter, Mark Selby, or James Ward? Start the bars. We were looking for who is a world-class golf player. You both locked in Mark Selby. You play golf, Dara?
No, I don't watch it either. So I had very little to go on there. I just picked the middle one, I'm afraid.
Okay. See him, Porter, of course. Take a deep breath. Move the bars. Dara, you're out of time. You're out of the game. You're going home. You've been beaten by the bar.
And I came second in that. Not many people know that. I had also applied to be on the chase, so... Luckily, the people from The Chase called me and said I was going to be on just before the people from Pointless did, because the people from Pointless wanted us to do a husband and wife team one. But my wife was heavily pregnant at the time, and she said, absolutely not. So yeah, I went on The Chase, and it was really weird experience because I did really well, and my team sort of had a panic moment, and they all took the lower offer. And this created a massive storm on social media when it went out. So it was the same day they were debating Article 50 in Parliament for Brexit. And my TV show was trending higher than that on Twitter and Instagram, which is funny, like genuinely hilarious, but it's also kind of worrying about people's priorities, to be honest. So the team got a load of stick. They got really badly sort of attacked, which I really didn't like, because they're lovely people. The upside of that is that it kind of, I think partly because of how I dealt with it on social media and other things, you know, that people tended to sort of be very nice to me. They started a fundraiser to try and win, get the money back and things. It was all very weird. But because of that, I sort of took charge in the team. I was the best quizzer in the team than the others. Some of them were fine. Like, they would be moderately good, but I was better than the rest. And I managed to put up a very good score. We put money in the bank and we beat Paul quite comprehensively. And this was about 6 months before Paul was the British quizzing champion. So it was a big achievement.
He's wrong. It's an insect. Okay, here we go. Your time starts again. Now, what Asian country was known? Time is up. Right. Now, here we go. 8 opportunities to push back. 8. 7 executed. Well played. You're going home with £6,300, £1,575 each. Dara, backdoor.
Yeah. So that was weird. It was really fun, you know, and we had I had a wonderful time, and I won some money, which I needed to pay for a front door for my house. Cause I don't know if people realize this, but my wife and I are both scientists and we're not really very well paid. And we just moved into our new home and the front door was rubbish and it was really cold and there was no back door on the kitchen. It was going straight into a conservatory that wasn't heated. So we really needed the money. It was a perfect time. It meant that we could, because it was recorded in sort of like the late summer. So it meant our sort of second winter in the house, we were able to actually keep warm, which was great. But yeah, it was really good fun. And the day after I recorded, I got a phone call from Helen, who's the executive producer on The Chase. And she called me up to ask me if I would come in to audition. And I almost hung up on her because I thought it was my friends at home pulling a prank on me. The only reason why I didn't is because I hadn't actually told them details because I wasn't allowed. I wasn't allowed to say that I'd won or I'd done well until it aired. And this is obviously well before it aired. It's like more than a year. And she knew details. So that's how I knew it was legit. But I really thought this was one of my friends who had got their wife or a friend of theirs to call me up. So yeah, I went into audition and it was a really long process. It was like 2 years before from that call until I got the job.
In Your Mirror with Neil Velio.
I did think, did he end up getting that door? So that's going to be one of the first questions. Thank you for answering that.
The show aired again in Ireland last week, and I got about 15 messages on Twitter asking me, did I get the door? I didn't realize this because this is the first time I owned the house. Doors are really expensive.
Yeah, they can be, can't they?
Like when we first said we moved in, I thought, you know, a couple of hundred quid, we'll get a door. Not even close. Like, a lot of money.
That's incredible. I love that. We've talked about the build-up to this situation. Let's talk about the situation itself. You mentioned that you sort of like quizzes and you grew up and you're obviously a very, very intelligent guy. So you're obviously very sort of grounded in yourself, you know, to an extent. But, I mean, it's pretty overwhelming, I'm sure. Like, even for someone as humble as yourself that's taking everything as it comes and being, I'm sure, very resolute about it, very humble about it. But, like, you've become a megastar almost overnight. Obviously, to you, it's not overnight because it's 2 years you mentioned. But to the general public, this is almost like the typical overnight success. So, you know, what's it like waking up as Dara Ennis in 2021 versus Dara Ennis in 2019?
Yeah, it's a bit weird. Actually, the weirdest one is further back, is when the show first aired. That was the mad time. That was the bit when I really couldn't handle it. I didn't know what was going on. Because it was such a Twitter sensation, I gained, I think, 3,000 Twitter followers in about an hour. And at that point, I literally signed up to Twitter because I went to my friend's wedding and the way that you shared photographs with them was on Twitter with a hashtag. So it was like hashtag Peter Pino wedding. So if people go back a few years, go to my first posts, it's just pictures of my like really close friend's wedding. That's what it is. And that's how we shared them. So I never used Twitter, really. I didn't know how to use it. And then all of a sudden, because of that, I left notifications on because, you know, if someone followed me, I was trying to find out who it was. It was probably a friend of mine. And suddenly my phone went absolutely nuts. I was getting phone calls from press. I was getting emails because I never really tried to hide myself online. And because of my job, I need to keep my work email is kind of open, you know, that kind of thing. So I was inundated with people all in a very short period. It was like a day. When I called my wife from the train station after I filmed the show, she said, this is going to be huge. People are going to go mad about the 3 lower offers. And I was like, no one's going to care, really. They really did care. And it was such a huge thing. They started to GoFundMe to try and win me the money back. It's like, stop, people. It's really nice and everything, but just stop. You know, that was way more intense. I was really prepared for it when it first aired because the show had people come from the ITV's press office. So, you know, Emma in the ITV press office came down to me when I was recording and I had a half hour session with her and she talked about all of the things that were going to happen. they were very, very prepared for me because Jenny got an extremely hard time when she first became a chaser. That hasn't happened to me, but I think that's largely down to misogyny, which is tragic. But, you know, that's just how it is. A lot of guys don't like successful women for some bloody reason. But, you know, I was really prepared for it the second time. So the first time was really shocking. But now, honestly, I know people don't like to hear this, but I live basically the same life as I always have. I still have to get up at, you know, 6:30 in the morning and change nappies and make breakfast and all that kind of thing. I go in to record. It's actually a relatively small part of my life. I only do, you know, 30 or 40 days recording in a year. The rest of the time, I'm a scientist and I work and I still live in the same house and all that kind of stuff. So in terms of change, that hasn't changed all that much. And because we're locked down and we wear masks outside, no one knows who I am. So I'm not getting stopped in the street. I've only been stopped by two different people in the last sort of 4 or 5 months that I don't know. It's not that big a deal.
There has to be sort of some things that you think, oh, I didn't expect this. I didn't see this coming and I could do without it. What would you say would be the number one thing that sort of fits that criteria?
There's a lot of people who care a lot more about TV than I ever thought did. They get really mad about contestants. And if you get a question wrong that they think is easy, they think, you know, it's bad. But the worst thing actually about the whole thing and the most annoying thing is the people who believe the show is fixed. That drives me crazy because that's basically calling me a cheat. And I really don't like that. That makes me quite mad. It's just painfully not true. There are independent adjudicator companies that work with the production company. And it's headed up by a lovely, lovely person, Olivia. They're called Beyond Dispute. And they make sure everything is meticulously fair. Like they're like beyond. It's actually ridiculous how fair the show is. If there's a stop in recording, they go back to the frame of the video where your lips start moving to check the time. So if it's like people say, oh, they definitely got that answer out. If Olivia says they didn't, then they didn't. You know, it's horribly fair. But like I had someone the other day accuse me that they never see your right ear. So that's where the earpiece must be telling you the answers. And it's like, if you were going to cheat, why would you use an earpiece? You know, I'm smart. If I saw the questions in advance, I'd know all the answers. You know, that kind of thing. But like people are just convinced that it's a fix. And that drives me mad. In terms of like the fame thing, I've had to just start filtering out. Like at the start, I replied to everybody who tagged me and all that kind of thing. But it just gets to a point where it's just too much. It's constant, especially when your show goes out. They just go absolutely mad.
Thankfully, most of your followers and fans seem to be quite switched on and a bit okay. But you get the odd one is sort of like, oh, can you set me up with, you know, the Beast? Can you do this? And I saw a tweet that you sent saying, I'm not Tinder personified, which made me chuckle tremendously. How are you finding that? Do you sometimes go, do you know what? I want to shut down my Twitter because it's too much. Or are you just sort of taking it in your stride?
I regularly stop looking at it. I regularly take like prolonged breaks, especially at the weekend, because it's too much. It's too much time. But I was very, very carefully like coached by the other chasers and what to do with social media, especially Jenny, because she's very active on social media and she got horrendous abuse. And if anyone's abusive towards me or anyone else, I just block them. I don't care. I'm never going to feed the trolls. If anyone's mean towards contestants, if they say mean things about any of the other chasers or anyone on the show, I just block them because I don't view it as a major interactive portal. I view it as a way to put out a message and maybe answer a few questions if people are nice. It's not a town hall debate or something. You know, I don't owe people on social media anything. And I view that as the way to look at it, you know, and I tend to put out things. I put out random facts. I talk about quiz. I talk about football. You know, I never talk about personal stuff. Because I don't want that life. I don't want my family involved. I never mention my children's names. I never post photographs of them. I very rarely mention my children, actually, in general on Twitter and Instagram. They don't exist in that sphere because I don't want them to. I don't want that to happen. My wife has specifically told me not to be tagging her and things. But, you know, I get people asking me to marry them. I've never met. I get people, you know, I do occasionally get asked, am I single? And, you know, I say, no, I am happily married. Or I post a picture of my wedding ring or something, you know. But because I don't talk about my wife too often because she doesn't want me to. But yeah, I largely view it as a publication by myself rather than an interactive process. And if people interact with me and they're pleasant and I have time, I'll reply. But if they don't, if they're unpleasant, I'll block them.
I think it's important that people that are listening to this are going to understand that that's your viewpoint, like be nice or, you know, do one, essentially. I think that's a really important thing. And some people did that. You're right. I think some people see it as like, because you're on Twitter, therefore you owe me something. You know, I'm almost paying your wages, you know, of fame, if you like, with your presence on here. So that's really important to sort of clear that up for people.
Chaser?
I got beaten by a better team. There's no shame in that. I should have played a bit better and shouldn't have said Sherry when you had red in the question. But other than that, they were all, I mean, the way they played the game, with Dara playing as he did, they were always going to win. You should be incredibly grateful to Dara for doing the hard work to get you to win. I feel, honestly, that you should have realised the good fortune you had in being in a team with such a good quizzer and should have backed yourself to get back.
What's it like? Because obviously Bradley comes across sometimes as he's a typical A-lister. You know, he's got a bit of a tone about him sometimes. And you can kind of tell when he's annoyed. Let's put it like that. He's not great at diplomacy, I don't think, with some of the contestants and some of the chasers. How well do you all get on, though? Like, really, when you sort of take the overall picture?
It is an exceptionally great place to work. And everybody is really friendly. It's a large part of the success of the show because that translates onto screen. You can see shows where there's tension between people who work there, and it's obvious after a while. But there's a great atmosphere. We get along really, really well. Anybody who's under any illusions, the Chasers are not the stars of that show. Brad is, and there is no question. He is the reason why it works. He is funny. I would say 3/4 of what he says doesn't make it to air because you couldn't put it out at 5:00. He has everybody in stitches. The contestants, as soon as they walk in, he has a sort of a speech that he does with them about how, you know, he's on their side and, you know, everyone calls him Brad. It's never Mr. Walsh or anything like that. He has no pretensions whatsoever. He is a consummate professional as well. A lot of the, you know, tension between him and contestants and him and the Chasers, it's completely made up. It's all an act. He does it just for, you know, for kicks and for giggles. And if he's on form, basically everybody is falling around the place laughing. And it can be really, really hard because we have to keep this poker face, especially when, you know, it's the, did we get it right? And the contestants going out, if we did, we kind of, because I got my first show, I got in trouble for smiling like an idiot. I was enjoying myself too much. He's very funny and he is the center of the show, but we all get along really well. You know, like the Chasers have a WhatsApp group. We all chat away. We give each other advice. We post the scores of our games and, you know, we commiserate when you lose and all that kind of thing. And, you know, Paul invited me to his wedding when he got married to Ollie. I got invited along, even though I really barely knew him at that point, you know, and I got that. I hung out with like, honestly, if you think I'm a nerd, you should have seen the guest list at that wedding. Because not only is Paul a top level quizzer, Ollie is as well. So the two of them, that's their thing. They do quizzes. Ollie was on Only Connect. It's unbelievable. It was basically the cast of Mastermind, University Challenge and Only Connect at a wedding together. It was so much fun though.
In Your Mirror with Neil Velio.
And as we're so early in his future journey right now, it looks exciting, but it's very unwritten. Dara, being the man he is, wanted to use his moment to offer insights and wisdom for anyone else who might fancy taking a stab at emulating his success.
The best thing to do is, and this is going to sound stupid, but so many people don't do it, is actually do quizzes. So join leagues. Don't just go to your local pub quiz because it's usually set by the same person and the questions become circular. So join your local league. There's tons of them. And at the moment, the online quiz league has, I think, 6 divisions or 7 divisions. It's really cheap. If you don't have a team, you can join as an individual and they'll put you together with a team. You'll get to meet loads of people. I'm in it. I'm in Division 3. We played Anne and Jenny's team last week or 2 weeks ago, and that's up on YouTube somewhere so people can watch it if they want. And it's really good fun. You will get way better if you do quizzes, because if you study, you'll do the things that you like and you'll bias yourself and you'll become a specialist, which is fine. But if you want to become a general quizzer, do lots of quizzes. But as a general thing, you know, outside of quizzes, if you really like something and you want to do it as a hobby and you want to get better at it, just do it and practice. You know, don't overthink it too much, because you'll be surprised what opportunities came along. Like, I definitely did not think I was going to end up on TV as a professional quizzer. Not even close. One of the reasons why I got the job ahead of other people are because I don't get very nervous, but it's also about personality. So if you're a mean and horrible person, you are never going to get a job like this. Now, I know some of the Chasers have a reputation of being a mean and horrible person, but they put that on. If you don't get along, if you're really unpleasant, no one will want to work with you. So, you know, practice on being good, but also practice on being, you know, a good person as well, I think is definitely key.
So you're telling me that Sean is not as moody and miserable as he comes across on TV?
Sean is one of the nicest people. He is so friendly, so wonderful. He is such a nice guy. When I first met him, the first time I met him, I was like, you know, I was going for a handshake, big bear hug. You know, it was like, welcome to the family, big pat on the back. Genuinely, genuinely lovely guy. If you want to see the real Sean, he does a fake Facebook quiz. So follow him on Facebook. He does a quiz and he presents it and you'll see the real Sean. He's a lovely guy. He's that the Dark Destroyer is not Sean Wallace. They're very different people.
That was the first season of In Your Mirror. I hope you've enjoyed it. I certainly have. And if you feel someone could benefit from hearing any of these stories, please do share your favorite guest episode via your social media channels. Until the next episode, have you looked in your mirror yet? Who is looking back at you? And what was their mirror moment? Please make sure you are following the show on your favorite podcasting app to ensure you do not miss future episodes. Thanks for listening.
In Your Mirror is a Podnose Podcasting Network show.